All right, a little ska music this morning on the Wild Rumpus. And I am super, super excited. We, Hal and Harriet and I have some company right now in the studio. And we've got some great, do you call it slam poets?
Yep.
We've got some slam poets here with us today. I'm going to let everybody introduce themselves.
Hi, my name is Tolua.
Hi, I'm Mercedes.
And I'm Merlin.
All right. We've got three amazing poets here to perform for us and let us know what it is that's going on. Is it tonight?
Yes.
Yes.
And what exactly is this billed as then?
Well, this is the Roaring Fork Wide Poetry Slam. So we have been working with students, high school students, for the last 2 weeks, as well as middle school students. And we have been prepping them for this big event, this poetry slam, in which we have each of them come. We pick the students that we think were the most engaged with what we were teaching, and we ask them to prepare a poem so that they could come perform at this poetry slam. So students from all the way from Glenwood all the way to Aspen are going to come compete to see who's the number one poet in the Roaring Fork Valley. But more than anything, they're coming in together to bring the Roaring Fork Valley together as one big community as opposed to separate towns. So,
where is this being held at?
The Third Street Center.
Oh, fantastic. Right here in Carbondale.
Yes.
All right. And where are you all from? Are you all local or?
No, we are actually all from different cities. I am from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, and?
I live and I work in Denver, so I'm a little bit more local. Yeah.
Okay. And Merlin, where are you from?
I live in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, fantastic. And, well, do we feel like giving us a little taste of slam poetry?
Sure.
All right. That sounds good. And what time is this tonight anyway?
This show starts at 6:30.
6:30 at the Third Street.
It gets pretty packed.
But it gets packed. Like basically what you're going to see is, you know, 24 kids spill their entire like heart and soul onto a microphone in front of about 500 to 700
people.
Wow.
And, like,
it's just it's amazing. There's all kinds of stories that these young people will tell you, from anything from like the realities of immigration policies in this current state of affairs to, you know, stories about their relationships with people they've lost or loved. I mean, it just depends. Like, sometimes they're really funny stories, but
it's all their own work, right?
Yes.
Fantastic.
And it's like, it's really cool. Like, you should go.
Oh, yes. I think everybody should go. I mean, why would you want to miss that? And so who wants to go first here? Give us a little.
I'll read a poem.
Okay.
Cool. Back in Albuquerque, I work with kids at the YMCA. So this poem is for them. These hands, my hands, are property of the YMCA childcare program. These hands know how big they seem to the hands of 4 to 11-year-olds. These hands open pickle jars, chip bags, and peel yogurt seals for the kids' hands who can't. They build Lego skyscrapers and move the plastico replica of jungle animals across the imaginary jungle. They fight blue army men against red army men in the dinosaur zombie apocalypse. They swing the rope as feet jump in rhythm. They hold on tight to the swing chains. They shoot the ball and pass it to the kid who never gets picked first. They pat on the back when Josh shares willingly for the first time, when Isaiah attempts to read, when Daniel dances to Michael Jackson. These hands point to timeout when Katie Gooch accidentally punches a kid in the face on accident again, when Kale throws his tantrums, when Ben cheats at kickball. They secretly show Maddie, Caitlin, and Hannah how to play poker for Oreos instead of real money when the boss isn't paying attention. Slide extra snack into the hands of the Seiss brothers because they're always hungry. Catch Lauren and Jordan holding hands under the table. These hands throw rocks, frisbees, footballs, wipe bloody noses, tables, tears, and juice spills. Signal Quiet Coyote for it to be quiet. Scold Eric for using the word can't. Joey for using the word stupid. Push brooms when Audrey finally gets picked up at 6:05. From 2 to 6, these hands step in for single moms like Ashley. Fill in for deadbeat dads like the absence of Steven's father, Joey's father, Daniel and Isaiah's father. These hands tell the children to pick a star from the sky. crush the dust in their palms, save it in their pockets, and pull it out when they need something hopeful to remind them how incredibly special they are. I know what it's like to feel that emptiness at some point. My hands reminisce. They remember when they were the ones causing the ruckus instead of mediating it. They remember the hands of the ones who took care of me from 2 to 6 while Mama worked and went to school, while Daddy worked the night shift, hands that occupied my time and mine when the divorce took the biggest part of my spirit. Those hands gave me something to look forward to. Those hands taught me how to write sentences, how to shoot a basketball, how to play pool, how to say no, how to celebrate mistakes, how to embrace my peers, how to embrace myself, how to work for everything good in life, how to take no from the boys. These hands are now following in the footsteps of those hands, leading by example. Those hands that played such an important role in my adolescence, my childhood memories are built off their fingerprints. I am who I am today because once upon a time, someone's hands were taking care of me in the most crucial part of my day, and now I find myself wanting to leave a handprint on each of these kids' hearts so that one day they will grow up. Their hands will wave at me graciously as they see me passing by as a way to say thank you, and my hands will wave back as if to say no, thank you.
Oh my gosh, that was amazing. That was absolutely amazing. Oh gosh.
She's amazing.
Wow. Wow.
She does that all through the house. We're staying at this house. She'll just be eating her like food, and she's like, here's another poem, guys. No, I'm just playing. She
doesn't. Oh, my God. Well, when you're filled with that kind of talent and those words, why not let everybody hear them, right?
Thank you.
Fantastic.
Thank you very much.
Would anybody else like to read one of their poems?
I think we should have Tolua read a poem.
I think so, too.
Because she is actually new to this project this year.
Oh.
We actually brought her on as our fourth poet because it was originally me, Logan, and Merlin. Logan couldn't be here today. He's in Aspen teaching, finishing up some workshops in Aspen. But the four of us have come together this year, and we brought Tolua in this week to help us work with high schoolers. And she's done an amazing job, and she's new. And I think that the world deserves to hear. The Roaring Fork Valley deserves to hear what she has to offer.
And I did get to see a little, I guess it was a YouTube video, of you performing a poem about your name. That was just, oh my gosh. I watched that just before I came on the air, and I got so pumped up and so excited to meet you all.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, it was fantastic.
Thank you.
Do you need anything to prepare, or do you know what you're...
I was going to go and run and grab my poem, but I think I have one in mind that I can share. First of all, y'all are so sweet, and I'm really, really excited, and I'm so happy to have been blessed to have been on this project. I'm going to share a poem for you all. A lot of what I write has to do, one, with my identity. So, yeah, I wrote a poem about my name because I have a very long and unique name, but I also like writing poetry about being a woman and what that journey is like. So this is a poem about my journey through womanhood. According to my auntie, there were words a little girl should never yell, like no. No is too much of a sinkhole, stretches her mouth and fills it with sand, and no one wants a girl with more rocks than all the stars inside her ready to throw. Everyone is afraid that if they ask loud enough, God will answer, and they will have to listen. Little girls have the power to ask and make everyone listen. And there are ways in which a girl should never be able to bend her spine over something so frail like self-worth. Her body, so powerful, will earthquake all over it, and the world will ask her to become smaller, trade power for a smallness that won't scare them. But little girls can scare the living crap out of anything, and little girls have been scaring the life out of your boot-stomping patriarchy since the dawn of time. Perhaps this is why we hold them like near-invisible pieces of thread, ready to be dropped and lost at moment's notice, naming them fragile, like fragile will make them easier to cut and use. But with every drop of blood from scraped knee, we remind them that the ability to be broken does not quantify fragility. Girls do not break silently. We will crash and make you swallow the glass of our fragments. And Never challenge a girl to a fight you are too sure you will win. You will lose. Like fishing boat to Mississippi River tied, her mouth is unforgiving despite the smiles. And little girls know the thunderclap of survival, how to become a lightning storm when provoked. There is nothing scarier than a girl who knows when to push back. The rosebud is nature's most deceptive fist. Little tomboy girls are not often told they are beautiful, but will stay awake at night with a flashlight to tell it to themselves. They will paint their own rose petals red until the world will tell them to stop. Beware of the ones that don't. And when the bow of girlhood finally breaks and all the water comes rushing in and the fish with their mouths flapping tell you to now be woman, now be the body the world will simultaneously pray in and desecrate, their mouths are just gasping for air. You are the dam that must withstand it all, and no one ever tells you how to mold this whirlwind of nature and thunder and fire and earthquake into woman. Sometimes little girl is just too stubborn to let her waves settle, so the body grows with a storm inside it. And sometimes becoming woman means digesting the harvest of little girl, little ocean, little Mississippi River tide, consuming everything, even the thorns and the alligators and the catcalls and the world praying and desecrating the broken rosebud fist, so tired of fighting when the glass has all been shattered. Becoming woman means letting little girl stretch into lightning storm just to make room for everything we must learn to carry. Remember, womanhood is the revenge for girlhood.
Oh my gosh, you are. We've got the world of talent in this room right here at Katie and Kay this morning. Oh my gosh, that was amazing. Fantastic. Now, how long have each of you been writing and performing? Was it something you've basically always done?
I mean, I've been writing since I was probably in ninth grade. Uh-huh. So a lot of the kids we work with, the same age. But poetry was like not a cool thing. You know what I mean? It was something that I did like privately, because uh-huh. It wasn't like you called your friends and you were like, hey, man, I just wrote these love poems. You know, you want to come over and play some Nintendo and listen to a couple of these poems I wrote? You know, so it wasn't like, you know, but that's why it's so cool, because we show up and we reinvent literature and writing and performance in the minds of a lot of young people. So when we go to all these schools, I don't know how many schools we've been to, but a lot over the last 2 weeks. And so I started early, you know, I guess.
No, that's awesome. And that's great that you guys are sharing your talent and your inspiration with today's youth. Get them out there, show them that it is actually cool. You can play Nintendo and write poems, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I don't know anyone who plays Nintendo.
All right.
I've heard some poems written about Nintendo.
Oh, there you go.
Star Wars this week. Yeah, it's pretty that's cool. Real.
And Merlin, do you have something that you'd like to do?
Merlin, do a poem.
Okay. All right. It is not uncommon in my line of work to witness a child shake as they read a poem for the first time inside of a classroom. But yesterday, I was not inside of a classroom. Yesterday, I was inside of a federal prison on the yard, where self-proclaimed paisas, peckerwoods, and crips conduct business against the backdrop of razor wire fences. On this particular occasion, inmates listened as 16 of the 35 men I taught in poetry workshops the previous week spilled their stories onto a single microphone. And the last to read is a man named C. His legs shake with nerves. His neck scar, glamorous enough to be featured on TV during a special about gangs. Content designed to keep suburban viewers amazed as if the corporations they work for ain't on some gangster-ish, please. C's bullet wounds dip like fingers in wet sand against his body. I stand behind him and watch as he reads. He is the shyest light in my classroom of convicts, where the eyes of these men follow me each day as I write on the board a dim glow trapped in their gazes, concealing all the caged memories of their childhoods, where the majority of them were raised to believe that they were mistakes. And a few bad choices along the way landed them in this place. Seems like their whole lives been misshaped. Somehow sees legs shake with purpose, nervous. As he speaks about his life, he is deathly afraid of what we're all afraid of. Exposing ourselves in front of a set of eyes that just might redefine us with their judgment. Explaining ourselves to a room of people who may not listen, who may not understand, who just might dismiss our humanity by labeling us bad or no good, or bad and no good, or dangerous, or black and dangerous and bad and no good, or poor, or less, or poor, or less, or poor, or less, or disposable like a body in Ferguson, Missouri. If only you could see all of our reflections trapped in the tremble rushing through C's veins as each word tumbles out of his mouth like a gas canister filled with tulips, like hollowed out grenades filled with lilacs, thumping through the eardrums of 1,000 inmates standing on the yard, standing and listening. Yeah, listening. An audience as warm as any room of humans willing to love.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Nice. Oh, wow. You are three very talented poets, and I'm so happy to have you here on the Wild Rumpus. And again, want to remind us what's going on tonight then?
Carbondale, uh-huh. 3rd Street Center. What time?
6:30.
6:30, but show 6:30. Up early because there's going to be lots of music and lots of people and lots of good vibes, man. It is one of the most joyful celebrations. I tour all across the country doing this work, and this is one of the livest, most amazing shows in the country.
Wow, that is fantastic. We are so lucky to have you up here. And I heard you have a fourth compadre, I think we were just talking about,
who's not here. Logan Phillips.
And so he'll be there tonight also?
Yes. He will be there. He's going to be our DJ for the night.
Nice.
He's going to be spinning all the good tunes. And yeah, we're going to all be there hosting, running the slam, getting the kids prepared, encouraging them to just put it all out on the stage and get free with their poems. So.
And how many kids are participating tonight?
24.
Wow.
Probably maybe a little more.
Maybe a little more depending
roughly
on.
24.
Yeah. Depending on.
Wow. And will you all be doing some of your work also?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, everyone will do something.
Well, gosh, I want to say thank you so much for stopping by. Does anybody else have anything they want to add or throw out there to our listeners?
I think we're good.
Oh, nope. My goodness.
Just come to the slam. Come with your through. Best selves, yes, and it's gonna be cheer on all these amazing high schoolers.
Oh, my gosh.
Great.
Well, thank you so, so much for stopping by and seeing us. Helen Harriet has very much enjoyed it. Also, she's quite...
What's her name?
Harriet.
Oh, I love that.
She's Howlin' Harriet.
Harriet's on my Snapchat right now.
There you go. Well, thank you so much. I am so lucky to have had you come by and see us today.